Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 99 of The Law Entrepreneur. My name is Neil Tyra, your host as usual. My guest today is my good friend, Tiffany O'Connell. Tiff, as you'll see, she prefers to be called. Tiff and I became friends several years ago when we were both part of Mark Miranda's Smart Marketing Group. And we've remained friends ever since. And I've watched her firm grow up in Natick, Massachusetts, to the point where she's a very successful solo and small firm practitioner. I wanted to have her on the program for a while, and we just haven't been able to make our schedules meet in a coordinated way. But we have now, and you're going to hear how she's gone from being in the insurance defense world to a trusted estates attorney, an elder law attorney with a thriving practice. And one thing I learned, you'll learn something new about Tiffany. Well, it's probably new to you, but for me, it's something new that I learned about Tiffany I don't recall ever knowing before. And so that's a little bit of a revelation, a tease about a revelation that comes up during the show. So without any further delay, let me introduce my good friend, Tiffany O'Connell. Tiffany O'Connell, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
I am thrilled that you have taken the time to be with us today, Tiffany. Can I call you Tiffany?
Please call me Tiff.
Tiff, okay. Tiff, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure, no, happy to do that. So I am a business owner. I own a small law practice in Massachusetts that focuses exclusively on estate planning and elder law. I set up the business probably, it was just about 7.5 years ago, the impetus being because I had gotten laid off and I just didn't want to look for another job and I wanted to do my own thing. So we're 7.5 years in doing estate plans and helping folks that are starting to age.
Now, you say you're 7.5 years in, you came from a previous position. When you came out of law school, did you envision yourself owning your own practice?
So no, actually, coming out of law school, the one thing I was never going to do was estate planning and elder law. I ended up going into, right from law school, I ended up going into corporate America, and I was in the insurance area for working for insurance companies for the first 10 years. And they were great jobs. They paid well, but it was your typical corporate position. And I wanted to start practicing law. So I decided to kind of go out and work for a small firm doing law. And so I ended up actually starting off in insurance defense law, which was not a good fit for me. But I did find estate planning.
Personal injury type defense?
It was actually more focused on environmental and bad faith actions against insurance companies.
Oh.
So that was kind of my specialty when I was with the insurance companies. And so that's what I was utilized afterwards as well.
You know, I think when we were all in law school, if you kind of envisioned where you were heading, I don't know too many of us who would have sat down and said, you know, I think I'd like to work for a company that helps defend insurance companies against bad faith claims. Just not on our radar.
Yeah. And you know, just like anything, I mean, there's certain lawsuits that are warranted and there's certain lawsuits that aren't. And so you always get a mixed bag.
But at least you got your taste of a small law practice in that environment.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. So there are things you liked about it, things you didn't like?
Yeah, I found that I was just not suited for litigation. I didn't like having situations where there was a winner and a loser. I found out that my personality was very much of a, how can we come to a win-win? So it was actually through my experience, because I was also in the military at the time, in the Army Reserves for the JAG Corps. And it was through there that I started doing simple estate plans, and I realized I really liked it. So that was kind of the impetus for me, you know, switching over to a firm that just did estate planning.
So did you seek out a firm in the area that was looking for an estate plan attorney, or and get hired by them, or how did you affect the transition?
Yeah, it was very fortunate on my end. I was actually coming off of active duty from a tour with the Army.
You know, by the way, just for a moment, you know, for our listeners, Tiff and I have known each other for a while, and this is the first I've heard that you were in the military.
You're kidding. Oh,
no,
my God.
I don't think we ever talked about that. So that's pretty interesting. But go ahead.
Yeah, no. So it was definitely, I'm so glad that I did it. I'm glad that I was able to serve. But yeah, it was a good experience for me. It helped me really grow as a person for doing it. But it was coming off of active duty and realizing that I didn't want to go back into corporate America. And I just happened to find an ad for a small boutique practice that was looking for estate planning. And I said, this is my opportunity, either do it now or go back into corporate America and, you know, get stuck.
Yeah. And so was that in your local area, or did you have to move to accommodate that?
No. So it was local. It was, you know, a good 40-minute drive, but really in the scheme of things, that wasn't bad at all. And so, yeah, I just lucked out that they happened to be looking for someone and thought I would be a good fit.
So that's where you cut your teeth. That's where you kind of learn how to do the initial or broaden your perspective in terms of preparing estate plans. When did you decide that your own firm was your future?
It wasn't until I got laid off from that firm. That's really what said, okay, let's try it.
Yeah. So you're in that class of folks that were thrown over the side of the lifeboat and decided they had to go out and practice on their own, as opposed to having a long run-up to that decision.
Correct. So I never thought that I would own my own business. I never thought that I'd be, quote, an entrepreneur. I kind of just fell into it. And I forget the book that I read this from, but it's kind of like there's a saying that an entrepreneur having a seizure. And so it was basically, I wanted to be on my own. I wanted to figure it out. And it wasn't until starting on my own that I realized, oh, there's a lot to this.
Yeah.
But I love it.
So how did you go about doing this? You decided, I'm going to start my own practice. Did you have a sense of where you wanted to practice, or the office environment, or staff, or were you doing it from the kitchen table? How did you create O'Connell Law?
Sure. I wanted to be very close to home. That was one of the big requirements that I set for myself for the business. I wanted to basically be in or at least next to the town where I lived. So that was a definite consideration for me and a big focus. Then for building, you know, starting the business, I had one client. I had my parents. So
right.
They were great. But I had, you know, a lot of building I had to do, because my role at the other firm was to service clients, not to, you know, bring in clients. And so that was a huge change for me. And luckily, I found out that I loved doing it. So, yeah, I started at my kitchen table. And I did, my paralegal had gotten laid off with me from the old law job. And so she started working with me just part-time. And then as time went on and clients started to build, she started coming on more and more to full-time. And then lo and behold, people started getting added to the firm. So
you're at the kitchen table and you decide you have to go get new clients in order to grow beyond that table and to pay for the paralegal that you wanted to hold on to. How did you go about getting those initial clients?
One of the things that I'm very grateful that I did, and I did this at the other firm, and I'm very grateful to the boss that I had at this firm, because he really did help set me up very well, because he was very enthusiastic for me joining different professional associations and other things as part of my work at the other firm, though I wasn't responsible for bringing in business again. And so I had a nice Rolodex. And because of that, I just started reaching out to people, letting them know what I was up to. I can't tell you how many coffees and lunches and drinks and dinners I had. But over time, it's amazing how if you just keep on doing that, it grows. And I also focused on the internet, which was also turned out to be a very big focus of my business.
So you just went through the old-fashioned process of, you know, working your contact list and setting up, you know, one-on-one networking events, coffees, drinks after work, that kind of thing.
Correct.
Interesting. So at some point you get large enough that you have enough clients that you can move away from the kitchen table. What next?
Yeah. So then, you know, it's finding office space. It's finding the right spot for it. It's suddenly having more staff that you're responsible for, more overhead that you're responsible, therefore more business that you're responsible for. So it's just amazing how, I won't say you get on the guinea pig wheel, but you almost find that you start just getting into a pattern where you just have to keep on going and growing in order to be able to survive.
So you started adding staff right away, right? You as you were getting clients, you already had your paralegal who you ramped up to presumably more something closer to a full-time status. Talk about that decision-making, how you decided who to bring on, when to bring them on, and how to bring them on.
Sure. I wish I could say that we were very strategic in doing that. I think if I were to do it again, I would be a little bit more strategic on it. That said, I've been very fortunate in having absolutely wonderful people come my way. I probably focused when I was hiring more on the personality of the person as well as how they fit into the culture more than what their skills were, or thinking that, you know, I could build their skills. Yeah. And for the most part, that did seem to work.
Well, I think the problem that a lot of folks have is, do they hire staff in hopes that that will allow them to generate more business? Or do they wait till they have the business and the workload such that it pays for the staff? Did you have that quandary, or did you face that quandary, or did you just take that leap of faith that timing is right? I see the business keep rolling in. I'm confident that I can support a staff member.
Sure. I wish it was the last part that you said, because I do feel that is the way to do it, just from what my experience has been. Mine was pretty much the team would say, we need help, and they'd be basically, you know, feeling buried. And that it kind of put a crunch on getting someone in versus, you know, taking the time to see what was needed and building from there.
Okay. So it was the work that drove the workload that drove the acquisition of staff, as opposed to adding staff to build the workload.
Correct.
So did you continue to do those, the same type of marketing, the you know, shoes on the sidewalk, coffee and drinks approach to marketing, or did you start and add some other channels?
Yeah, so over time we did add other channels, and after a while there was just so many coffees and lunches that I could go to in a day, and so I really set limit that so I could actually get work done. But we started adding other channels. I think I mentioned that one of our focus has been the internet, because we have found that's been a very good source for us. And so just trying to make sure we're showing up very well in the search engines and, you know, just paying attention to that and making sure we brought on a marketing company that could really help us with that. And actually, Neil, that's how we got connected,
right.
Same marketing source. And they were fantastic. So the other thing, you know, we tried the retail marketing events. That honestly, for me, you know, having a marketing event where someone came that got a mailer from us and had dinner, even though I had a great time doing it, I wasn't successful, and it was probably just the way that we implemented it in making that really work for us. What did work for us is doing it on a much more intimate level, actually just reaching out to our personal professional network and offering lunch and learns for them just to come and hear a topic and get some credit for it. That has worked out really well for us.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Okay, so you didn't do educational seminars for prospective clients, but instead you reached out to professional acquaintances to do a lunch and learn, sort of almost like referral sources. Is that it?
Correct.
Okay. And what, you bring them in the office and have lunch and talk about estate plans or some aspect of estate planning?
Exactly. It could be some aspect of estate planning or estate administration. We also, because of the elder law aspect of our business, we would bring in people that would talk about dementia and other things that, you know, are very pertinent, whether it's to the professional referral source or to them personally or others. And so we found those to be very successful events too.
So you're still pursuing elder law as a practice area?
Correct. Yes.
Because I know you were at one time just primarily estate planning.
Yeah. So even though my experience also encompassed elder law through my background, I had primarily focused on estate planning because that was just a very easy, natural draw for me.
Right. Right. So did you do, I know you have a beautiful website, and I don't know that we mentioned this at the top of the show, but you're located just outside of the Boston area, right?
Yes.
So O'Connell Law Group, and we'll have the link for the website in the show notes. But you have a beautiful website. Did you do or spend any effort on, say, pay-per-click or search engine optimization techniques to try and raise the profile of that website, or did you just look for organic growth of the site?
We tried pay-per-click a little bit. I don't think we tried it long enough to see whether it really helped or not. I think it's really been more of an organic growth.
And do you still write, publish new content on your website?
We do. I wish I could say that I personally have had the time to do most, if not all of them, but most of them are actually what we have done to leverage our time as well as our referral network is to ask our referral sources if they would like to guest blog on our for our website. And that's been a great way to keep fresh content.
Oh, that's interesting. How did that come about?
Actually, that came about through my paralegal. That not the first paralegal I mentioned that came on with me at the very beginning, but the one that came on with me about 3 years ago. She loves marketing, and she came up with that wonderful idea because she couldn't corner me to sit me down long enough to write something. And so she's like, I got to figure out another way.
And so you approach, say, a nursing home director or a financial planner who wants to reach out to a broader audience and have them write an article for your or a blog post for your website?
Correct. And then we'll review it to make sure it seems appropriate, which we haven't had any issues up until now. And then we post. And so it's a great way for us for fresh content and a great way for them to spread the word.
Well, it certainly leverages that network in a very interesting way and helps bring their tribe to your reservation, so to speak.
Exactly. So it's a win-win, right?
Love that idea. I'm going to stop right here and write that down. I'm going to see the paper because I'm going to use that. Tell us a little bit about your staffing now. We know you have one or two paralegals. How is your office set up, and has that been static for a while, or does that change from time to time?
It changes from time to time. I do have long-term employees with me. We probably got up to a high number of 8 people at the firm. We're now down to 6, and I kind of like that number. I actually acquired another law practice about 3 years ago. And so that helped with growth by 3, and then 1 has left.
Oh, interesting. So you purchased or merged with another firm?
Yeah. So I actually acquired another practice.
Is that a different practice area, did you say?
That was a practice area that focused exclusively on elder law.
Okay. So that certainly bolstered your elder law position for sure.
It definitely did.
But and that brings its own set of challenges, though, when you add a business stream to your existing business and try and merge systems and personalities and workflows and client bases. And I can imagine that was a hectic time for you.
Oh, just slightly. So yeah. So it was everything that you just mentioned. So there's the good, the bad, there was the ugly. But in the long run, I'm really glad I did it. And I knew it was going to be a lot of work. But as probably most people would tell you after the fact, you didn't realize how much work it was.
Right. Right. So you have one grand poobah in yourself, who oversees this entire empire, and then. How many attorneys?
Currently, there are 3 attorneys. The one is currently out on maternity leave. So there's 2 that are working, and I'm one of them.
Okay, so 2 active. And then how about staff? Tell us our staff.
So, currently, we have 1 paralegal, 1 legal assistant, and 1 law clerk.
Do you use interns, law school interns, or other types of interns at any point?
Yeah, so it turns out that as part of this acquisition that I did 3 years ago, I ended up having an intern come over from this elder law practice. He was in college at the time, and he went on to law school and is in his second year of law school. And so he's been phenomenal. So it's just, I highly recommend leveraging interns and clerks.
Yeah, my old firm that I was with had a steady stream of interns. They had undergraduate interns that worked kind of just the office environment, doing office tasks. And then they had law school interns that did some of the low-level support for the attorneys in the firm. And that gave them a steady stream of qualified candidates when they were looking to expand. And I've always thought that was an appropriate methodology for kind of grooming your staff. I haven't done that myself, but I would envision that if that were the opportunity presented itself, that would be the approach that I would take.
Yeah, and that is a way that we're planning on leveraging going into the future.
Yeah. So tell us about the office environment then. So you're in a big building or local, you know, quirky New England space, or how are you set up physically?
I guess you would say we're in quirky, charming New England space.
Love that.
Yeah. So we actually are in a colonial building from the 1700s, which really makes us stand out.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely charming. And it's right next to a farm with horses and cows. And so it's a very wonderful, relaxing atmosphere, both for us as, you know, the folks working there, but also for the clients coming to us.
Now, even though you're in this charming location, what role does technology play in your firm's practice of law and in your growth, really?
Technology for us has really been, you know, a very strong focus. One of the things that I was able to do when I started my practice back in 2010 was to actually start off paperless, because luckily one of the projects I had done at the firm I had worked with was to help them figure out a system to go paperless. And so we were able to implement that from day one, which I recommend for anyone starting a business. So having, you know, good technology in place was very important for us. So we try to stay, we might not be ahead of the curve, but we definitely try to stay on top of the wave, if not a little bit in front of the wave as to what technology offers, so that we can leverage and be anywhere to work.
And that was going to be my next question. Does that allow you to work in a virtual environment so that you and others within the firm can work from different locations?
Correct. And so, it's been a great thing.
So what's your data model like? Do you use a case management tool, and is that all up in the cloud? And, you know, that kind of backup kind of issue that requires, is that a part of the process?
Yeah, our current data management is not in the cloud, and we're already starting to see what's holding us back because of that. So we actually are in the process right now of reviewing our options so that we can change, so that we are cloud-based.
And do you use a case management tool of any sort?
We do. I don't know if you want me to share the name, since I'm not exactly happy with the name, but the product. But I'm happy to do that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll just say that you do have a tool, but you're looking at changing.
Yeah, that might be the best.
That's fine. Well, one of the things I was mentioning in our last episode was that I'm overprescribed in terms of backup. I'm really nervous about somehow losing my data. Particularly since my database is in the cloud, and I have it stored on in Dropbox, but I also have an iCloud account, and I mirror those two. So they have, I'm literally in the cloud twice. I'm like a double rainbow.
Yeah, we have a similar concern. I guess I'm a nervous Nelly with it, but I'm always nervous that if one thing fails, I want to make sure. I think we actually have two different backups. Yeah, a local backup as well as a cloud backup.
Yeah. If someone were to corner you in one of those coffee shops and say, "Hey, Tiff, you're a successful businesswoman. What's your best entrepreneurial skill, or what entrepreneurial skill of yours most contributed to your success?" How would you answer that question?
I guess it's just being comfortable in being in unknown territory, being comfortable in that. And I wish I could say I am comfortable in that. I think it's always a moving target, but I tried the best to be comfortable in being uncomfortable. But I think it's just being, you know, open and being a resource, and just knowing that what you put out there will come back to you. And I do believe that what you put out comes back to you in multiples.
If they ask, then what is the skill that you wish you had refined more or developed more?
I would say I probably have been too nice. I think
so. You wish you had developed a meaner streak, huh?
Well, and you know, that's why I'm hesitating, because it's not a meaner streak, but as a business owner, you have to make uncomfortable decisions, and you have to make uncomfortable decisions that affect not just you, but the person that, you know, you're having to make the decision about, and the ramifications for that, whether it's for their family or other team. It's kind of, I don't want to say you feel the weight of the world on your shoulders, but you just realize that sometimes you have to make tough calls, and you got to be able to do it.
Yeah, I don't mean to make light of the situation. As an entrepreneur and as a business owner, as you said, you're responsible for everything, and the good and the bad. And sometimes the bad things are difficult to do. And I know in my own practice, I have hesitated to pull the trigger on some decisions just because they were uncomfortable. And that cost me in the long run. And I think you have to trust your gut and recognize that, as you said, sometimes you have to make those uncomfortable decisions. And it is a skill, and it is a mindset, if nothing else, that you have to develop as an entrepreneur.
Yes, and I think it is. I think there is a certain mindset, and I think I've fallen into the situation way too often of saying, I don't want to do it because that's going to be uncomfortable, or that's going to make someone upset. And bottom line is, as a business owner, you have to look out for your clients, and you've got to look out for your team and do the best thing that's going to be best for all of them.
You know, I'm reminded of the fact in a previous life, in a previous profession, when we had some management consultants come in to our business and kind of do an audit. And I was managing a large team at the time. And we got around to discussing the results of the audit with, in particular, my role on the team. I'll never forget, the quote was, is more of a country club manager would rather enjoy the environment than make tough decisions. And I thought, I was so angry when they said that. But then I realized it was exactly spot on, because that was true. I'd rather enjoy the environment and then make tough decisions. And so when I went out on my own, I had to make those challenging decisions. And it's not easy at all times. So, what role does social media play in your firm, or does it?
It should. Maybe that's the best way to answer it. We do have a Facebook page. I don't think we posted on it recently. I used to have someone who did that. I've got to get back into it. I do believe paying attention to social media is very important. I have to say, even though we haven't been actively proactive in social media, I think social media has been very good to us. At least locally, whether it's the, you know, the local town's mom page or the town's, I don't know if this is a national thing, but there's a social media next door social site that, you know, folks in that community can go to as a resource. Those sites have been amazing for me, because we've been very lucky to have clients say, oh, you're looking for someone? Here, go see Tiff.
So you didn't actively reach out to those platforms. They kind of just included you organically in their offerings?
They did. So I can't imagine what it would be like if we actually actively did pursue it.
That's interesting. So it's
just been amazing.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, listen, I would be thrilled to spend, another hour chatting with you. I haven't spoken to you in a long time. I'm glad that you were able to come on the show today. Tell our audience a little how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you say. What's the best way to reach you?
Yeah, so probably the easiest way to remember it is just our website. Our website is O'ConnellLawGroup.com. And then if you go under the team section of the website, you'll find my profile for Tiff O'Connell, and my email and contact information is right there for people.
All right, so we'll have that on the show notes, and I encourage anybody who has a follow-up question to figure out how Tiff has gone from working at the kitchen table to this successful and well-recognized firm up there at Natick, Massachusetts, that they reach out to you and give you a shout.
Great. Thank you, Neil.
Tiffany, thanks so very much for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur. I hope to see you again or talk to you again shortly.
Oh, I hope so.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.